Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our regular Monday stream. As always, I am joined by our host. I'll actually say it this time because this is technically your Monday show. this is Evelyn's corner. So say hello, Evelyn.
It is indeed. It is my corner.
Yes,
You're very welcome.
Evelyn is who the corner is.
Nobody.
is named after.
Yeah, nobody puts me in the corner, I think. Oh, is that how it goes?
No, someone was just saying that AA is still wrapping up like a 5 hour stream, but that's his problem. I'm sure people will funnel over from there at some point.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Go and poke the people in the chat there. Come over our way once they're done. Yeah,
Yes.
I think he has been live since like 2 or 3 o'clock today though. It's been like 4.5 hours.
God. Yeah, I couldn't.
He's been reacting to someone else's video, and then he's gonna do three more or something. I don't know. Clearly, it's paying the bills.
I
So
cannot stand reaction content.
no.
Rank below it's below rank punditry. But
No, do you know what it is? It's punditry that's rank. It's in the. It's not rank in that it's low. It's rank in that it's fucking stinking.
anyway, we've got a kind of an eclectic mix of stories today. Some that you found, some that have naturally kind of found their way into it, but all of it is kind of tied together by what we've been saying is that a lot of the quote unquote collapse stuff we've been seeing, like the collapse porn, the recession porn, all this of the like the regime people telegraphing their attacks, like they're windmilling their fist in the distance. All of it is what I'm going to keep referring to as controlled demolition. And
Yeah,
there
no,
is
it's very
yeah.
much a hit parry on the right frame sort of maneuver. Before I forget, because we'll try and get through stuff in a relatively quick fashion as we normally try to do these
Yes.
days. I will quickly put a link in the chat. I'm sure we can add it to the comments later as a pinned one. Panama Hat put up his speech at Nomos London on his own channel earlier on
Yes.
this morning, and I've seen some
That
quite
is out
positive
now.
responses to that already. I'm also, even though we had nothing to do with the recording itself, I'm also quite glad that it's a slightly high quality recording that people can actually listen to.
Big
So,
thank you to Millennial Woes for that.
yeah,
He was the one
indeed,
who recorded it,
yes.
so. I will do the normal YouTube stuff. As always, we are fully monetized. The best way to donate to us is via our Streamlabs. That takes the lowest cut. But if you must go through YouTube, we have memberships available if you want to support us monthly. And we are also have the full slate of cringy super stickers and, of course, the super berries, the super chats
The super
themselves.
beans.
The super beans, yes, the magical super beans. So we have the normal YouTube stuff. I'll probably say so at the end. I know it's cringe, but do give us the plus one interactions do make a difference.
Yes.
More people have been saying they've been getting our notifications when they do that,
Well, this
so
is
it's just
something
the way the game's played.
I was actually wondering if it's maybe worth making some posts and doing our own. I know we get analytics and whatnot anyway, but where do people find our content from? Obviously, there's people who show up regularly. Are they seeing it in the Telegram, or do they just know that, like, oh well, roughly 7:30 on a Monday, roughly 8 o'clock on a Thursday, they just come looking for it? Or I don't know. I do wonder sometimes.
Yes, hello to everyone who's filtering in the chat. I will put out a poll actually, probably tomorrow as a community post, and try and figure out where people are consuming our content from, because that would be useful. I think we also have, like I said, our a lot yeah a lot of people kind of came here via AA, but he doesn't link it every time. So I'll try and figure out kind of where our audience pipeline is, but that's not what the stream's about today. Like I said, we've ordered kind of an eclectic mix here. Do you want to give us a quick intro, or should we just get right into it?
Well, I think I maybe will bring in some of the other parts I'm more au fait with. Because you're gonna bring us into something which I think we're probably all familiar with, but maybe in a way that we've not quite connected with other stuff, so.
No, there's something I wanted to open with. It's a little blog post from City Journal about the. It's just called America's Missing Money. It's very Mises-pilled, very Mises kind of caucus pilled in that way, in that it's very much about kind of the expansion of the money supply, the reckless spending, blah blah blah. America wastes money, we all know this. But it talks about the $21 trillion that the federal government can't account for. But there's the second paragraph here, which I love, that they just sneak in there and don't mention it again. On September 10th, 2001, then U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld disclosed that his department was unable to account for roughly $2.3 trillion worth of transactions. The next day, the U.S. sustained the terrorist attacks that changed the world, and the startling revelation was forgotten. They just kind of plonk that on the table and leave it there. It's kind of amazing that was put out there. By the way, that was $2.3 trillion across maybe three fiscal years. $2.3 trillion in 2001 money was more than the complete kind of budget the Pentagon had. So the fact they could misplace $2.3 trillion over a small number of years was extremely extraordinary. But this was never looked into. The Pentagon was never audited.
Well, yeah, it's actually quite interesting here. When an account discrepancy occurs that cannot be traced, it's customary to make what is called an undocumentable adjustment. This is similar to when your checkbook balances off by, say, $10. You add or subtract that amount to make everything balance with the book. In 1999, the amount that the Pentagon adjusted was 8 times the Defense Department budget for that year. It was 1/3 greater than the entire federal budget. By 2015, the amount reported missing by the offices of the Inspector General had increased to $6.5 trillion. That was just for the Army.
Using
public data from federal databases, Mark Skidmore, he must go through a lot of pants, a professor of economics at Michigan State University, found that $21 trillion in unsupported adjustments had been reported by the Defense, Housing and Urban Development departments between 1998 and 2015.
That's $65,000 for every American.
Who did he just find that $21 trillion was missing? Did he just have the papers?
I imagine that he just went through what the adjustments were. You know what this is? This is the inflation furnace. This is the inflation incinerator.
Yes.
This is where the printed money goes to die. That's what this is. This is the US government in 2001 practicing MMT. It is what that really is. But it reminded me of all of the weirdness of, like, you know, paper billionaires and the opacity of crypto and money existing but not really existing. It's a good kind of background point that we have this event, $2.3 trillion announced the day before 9/11 happens. The attacks happen. There's conflicting stories about whether or not they claim the records were lost in the wake of that. That's quite unclear. There's so much dust around that it's hard to actually make an assessment whether or not that ever even was claimed. I believe it was because of some of the inferences in news reports at the time, but they were inferences. They kind of made excuses, used it as an excuse. Sorry, guys, we can't deal with this budget. A plane just hit our building completely square on to the point there's a punch-out hole an inch from the ground on the other. Anyway.
Yeah, there's no titanium left, and we don't reckon a plane could have flown at that speed there, that close to the ground, but never mind. Which is why it's no coincidence whatsoever that, you know, White House generic token black woman the other day was part of some press meeting with the White House, says more crypto regulation needed to avoid harming Americans. And then they go on here to mention the FTX thing, which is part of the stuff we're going to talk about this evening. But I'm pretty sure I remember seeing this headline. God, it's playing the audio. Ugh. I'm pretty sure I remember seeing this headline morning UK time before the FTX stuff came out afternoon UK time on the same day.
Well, it's been kind of obvious that this is going to happen for a few days, but the fact that they'd come out and say this in sync with it kind of all kicking off is a little bit. So I think that they were trying to get ahead of it.
Yeah,
I think Washington knew it was amongst the people who were in charge of FTX, the group of 10 or 15. It was apparently an open secret that they were just fucked and they were just trying to keep the wheels on it.
People might not be able to see this on the website, and because I'm not someone that regularly visits Fox News, I'm going to quickly adjust the OBS thing and it's going to look terrible. But look what it says in the bottom left there. Fox News, democracy, 2022. Ugh. The containment the containment is strong with this one.
Yes, big containment hours. And it's a shame that modern web formatting has spread narrow. It makes it impossible to display things on a regular screen. It's because they're trying to optimize for both desktop and mobile, and therefore optimizing for neither.
Yes.
Web 3.0, as it apparently is now, is so ugly. It's even worse than like GeoCities sites, GeoSites stuff with like 1,000 GIFs on them. It's somehow worse.
Bring me back to the days of like neon colored font with horrendous alias and really burning my eyes out.
People who made really, really terrible websites in like pirated copies of Dreamweaver. Remember Dreamweaver? Remember that shit? Well, for those of you who don't know, the story is that FTX, which was a crypto finance platform, as well as being a crypto exchange that held most of its assets in this fictional FTX supposedly stablecoin thing. It's a little bit like the unpegging of Tether. What happened here was that basically it turned out that the Ponzi scheme was a Ponzi scheme. People are only feigning shock because they cozied up so heavily to the US government, and they were supposed to be like the leading light in legitimizing like crypto hedge fund stuff.
Did we not talk about this very Sam Bankman-Fried character a month or two ago when it was Ben Bernanke's $1 billion crypto fund bucks bazooka or something?
Yes, we did. We did mention FTX. We did mention Sam Bankman-Fried in passing. Mostly about the fact that crypto has been cozying up to the US government so heavily. There's a lot of cope and seethe about this event.
Yes.
A lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. There's a lot of connections as well. We'll go through a lot of people. Yeah. Yes, the $1 billion fund bucks bazooka. That is, yeah, thank you, Yiz. That's basically what we talked about.
But the long and short of it is, as we explained with some of the exchanges before,
yes,
guy gets a little bit of money. I think if I remember correctly, I've got a thing here. Give me just a second. Sam Bankman-Fried is a direct relation of Barbara Fried, who I believe is his mother. Organization of Mind the Gap and Get Out the Vote organization, Center for Voter Information. They're running all this stuff. They've got all this Democrat PAC money, and then in some way, shape, or form, some of it ends up in Sam's hands.
Yeah.
And then he starts a crypto platform with it. And then leverages against lots of money he doesn't actually have, which is what almost all crypto and stock and share like consumer platforms do.
Fractional reserve banking.
Because I remember
yes.
In one of the sort of things that was floating about in Telegram, it's like, well, Sam Bankman-Fried wasn't allowing people to trade crypto. He was giving them IOUs, and it's like, wow, you've just worked that out. that's what
Coinbase does.
Yeah, that's what they've been doing with like the stock market for God knows how long, and have they been doing with crypto since the very start. And then essentially much like almost similar to the situation with the pensions that we were talking about the other week, some of the people from Binance, who are these trustworthy characters from the CCP that we've talked about previously before as well.
Yes, Binance has big links to the Chinese government.
Turns around and basically says to Mr. Fried, excuse me, I believe you owe us some money. He goes, sorry, I don't have that money. And then his crypto goes pot. You know, essentially the same sort of margin call situation. But because...
So it's a cross between a margin call and a bank run.
Yes.
Is essentially what happened to FTX, if you guys are familiar with both of those terms. There was a run on the Binance, and halfway through this, Binance was talking about merging with FTX, basically as a scheme to audit them. Mm-hmm. And they got killed when people figured out that none of their numbers make sense, and they don't actually have any of the assets they say they do. As is the case with a lot of these financial startups. This is how all crypto exchanges work, by the way, even the supposedly decentralized ones. Someone somewhere always has a backdoor they can use to siphon money off, because that's how these crypto bro billionaires become crypto bro billionaires. They steal people's money.
No way. That can't be true.
That's where it's all coming from. They created the platform. They wrote the code. Therefore, they have the backdoors into it.
And then we've got this informative tweet from someone who definitely isn't you.
My media intern that runs a Twitter account.
And it's not me, and it's also not Jess, so it's going to be the mystery person. Freed was born in 1992, campus of Stanford University, born and raised to an upper middle class family. There you go. You've got the thing here about the Mind the Gap left wing super PAC. Oh,
what's cut off there is Linda P. Freed is a senior legal person studying pandemics and the elderly at the World Economic Forum.
Oh, well, the thing is, you'll find as well that this Mind the Gap PAC and FTX, it also funded the studies that said that ivermectin or whatever it's called was ineffective at fighting COVID as well. It's interesting that.
Yes, it is. The ivermectin stuff. But the studies were linked to people in this family. And so.
The mission of Mind the Gap is to empower private political donors to strengthen our democracy by providing them with evidence-based guidance on electoral strategies, tactics, and programs that are likely to achieve the greatest impact in a given election. That's a terrible company mission. You would lose you get an F on your entrepreneurship module for that kind of nonsense.
Well, basically, there was a leaked memo from them. They were saying they were leveraging the big data stuff in Silicon Valley to try and target what they thought were the races that would benefit most from raw spending, and then fire hose tens of millions into those races. But this Mind the Gap group existed, I think, before FTX did.
Yes, it did. But that's the thing I've seen essentially suggested is that it is money that was involved in Mind the Gap is actually maybe what really kicked off FTX from the get-go, which means there was an unbelievable amount of corruption and financial fiddling charges that could go along with this, which are never going to anyway.
It's never going to materialize. We're never going to see proper fruit of
what
this.
What is it with these crypto, organizations and funds and individuals involved in the crypto movement, and they're want to strengthen democracy?
It's bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, this has been twice in the last 2 weeks now. We've had a story about this, and we haven't even gone looking for it.
No, this has really kind of come out organically. Everyone's talking about it. It's everywhere. People are complaining about Elon tweets about it and shit like that.
You've got one here from January 6th, 2020. Inside the secretive Silicon Valley group that has funneled over 20 million to Democrats. What was it by the time they'd finished?
No one knows. That's the thing. They do a big shell game with it. Yeah. Mind the Gap was superseded, though, really, by the financial contributions of Bankman-Fried and his other associates. We're not going to go into that today. That might be something to go into on a later stream. I just wanted to highlight this. Yes, here we go. Crypto, this is before the FTX went pop, but Bankman-Fried was, I think he was Biden's fifth biggest donor. Mm. And during the 2022 election cycle, Bankman-Fried alone was their second biggest contributor after George Soros, and his other executives as well. I think the Washington Times worked out, again, we'll probably go into more detail on this on another stream because it's such a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But the Washington Times estimated that FTX executives as a whole had contributed $71 million to 2022 midterms, and that's just to one race. That's just to one set of races. Sorry. So between them, there's one of their guys whose job it was to fund rhinos. Basically, they pumped about $20 million into rhinos and about $50 million into the DNC. Oh, the DNC. Sorry, I had to sneeze there.
Sorry. It's
$50 million in a single election cycle from a single company that was stealing, that has been proven already to have stolen deposits.
See, this, irrespective of that, I want to come to the physiognomy here. There is a sort of Weinstein, Moloch, owl face going on.
he does have big, big Berg energy. Big study. It's also like the beanbag billionaire as well.
Yeah, no, exactly. I was about to say the beanbags and the tatty New Balance shoes and the iPhone cables everywhere. He just looks so hateful.
It's billionaires who performatively live like broke students and then claim to be philanthropists, and it turns out that they're operating massive DNC Ponzi schemes.
Well, because it gets even better. I mean, this is the thing I joked to you at the start of the stream about, and it's the way I've thought about this basically since it happened. Oh, you mean to tell me that the Democrat Party is using weird things like, you know, crypto startups to funnel dirty money in and out of Ukraine and into in and out of their political campaigns? No way! Imagine my shock. Oh.
That wouldn't happen.
No,
it's,
of course
it's
not.
The exact, the thing is, it's the exact same thing they initially accused the Russians of doing.
Is XRP only worth 35 cents these days?
Yeah.
God, I remember when that was maybe worth like a fiver at one point.
Yeah, ugh. Bitcoin has cratered a little bit. If you look at it, it's down to 16k. So we've seen a lot of the froth come out of that market.
But again, this is another one here where this is from March 14th. So this is an earlier article about this. That's
yes,
you know, this is a positive sort of thing they've tried to engage with here, which again is something maybe we'll need to go into another time. The DIIA system in Ukraine, which is them pioneering digital identity, has probably no link to this stuff whatsoever.
It's also what people are highlighting here, which is true. I won't go into the weird like red line diagrams people make because a lot of them are crap, honestly. But the issue is you have this opaque pool of money that the US government used. They used FTX, and then the Ukrainian government in turn invested other outside money into FTX to use their whole robust crypto platform. You know, it's almost like the saving the unbanked, but for the Ukraine chunguses.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, your financial institutions domestically might collapse, but, you know, FTX will keep you afloat with our magic coin and Ben Bernanke's big crypto bazooka into Ukraine. And it was a giant opaque pot of money.
God.
It helped FTX hide the Ponzi scheme. And nobody knows what went in, nobody knows what came out, nobody knows which way around the exchanges were. And hundreds of millions over a number of years came out of FTX and was funneled directly into Democratic races.
There seems to all be some scheme involving the National Bank of Ukraine, Ukraine's crypto savvy Ministry of Digital Transformation is also involved.
Yes.
I'm sure that's an entity that didn't exist in the Ukrainian government until after 2014 in the Euromaidan coup, which is also no coincidence whatsoever. But yeah, they say other estimates place the amount close at 100 million, but totals vary with market swings and exactly which websites include. Yeah, so it might be worth pennies now.
Well, the timing as well. I want to go into the timing of this before we go into what a limited hangout this is.
Oh no!
Before we move on,
it's a shame this all went pop. Crypto assets proved extremely helpful in facilitation of funding flows to Ukrainian citizens and soldiers. So they're not even bothering to pretend it's aid. You're paying for militiamen, as well as in raising awareness and engaging people worldwide. Alexander Bornyakov, an official at the Digital Ministry, said in a statement, he hinted that an upcoming NFT collection will give the next boost to the crypto fundraising protest.
Don't you want some
I need my big chungus Zelensky lazy ape NFT. Yo!
We need the billionaire beanbag non-extradition country club. Yes, and then we'll before we move on to this, I just want to sum up quickly that what we've seen in terms of the stuff with FTX has been one, a very large grab towards central bank digital currencies, crypto regulation in quotes, but not in the bad sense that the crypto bros keep crying about. It's the codifying of the cryptoization of digital identity and digital money. It's really the whole crypto's good, guys, but we just need the government to take the bad parts out of it and protect you from the excesses of the market. And the timing is that FTX was set up just about when Biden announced his campaign, and just as they peaked and managed to squeeze 71 million in a single cycle out of this organization, it's collapsed, and it's collapsed basically under the cover of the midterms news. So it would have the least news cycle impact immediately, but would have a high impact on them being able to claim that they need to regulate the market. Mm-hmm. So it's the timing of it is just, it's so perfect.
Yeah.
The stuff writes itself, really.
Well, at the same time as well, I mean, we've got to consider the fact that there is probably not only one Sam Bankman-Fried out there. There's probably dozens. No. There might be hundreds.
Yes.
We'll know about this one, and as you mentioned before we started, it's a perfect opportunity to make the whole thing a limited hangout. And then at the same time, you know, it's one of the things we've sort of possibly mentioned that we're not sure, maybe it will come about, maybe it won't. But this is perfect, you know, building bits and pieces of the narrative towards the how the crypto crash caused the next 2008.
Yes.
You know, there is so many perfect opportunities here to make the controlled demolition of so many things in society look completely chaotic and out of control and unrelated.
Well, the whole thing about this, that FTX never properly existed.
Mm.
It was a fugazi, it was a fugazi, it was always just nothing. And it was they pretended it existed. They looked the other way for just long enough to launder hundreds of millions of dollars that we know about through it. And just as a piece of background information, we now have kind of a slight vindication of what we talked about, which is that there will be a negotiated settlement in
quickly
Ukraine.
Before we do that, we do have a super chat from...
Oh, yeah, I was literally about to segue into that. No,
this research detail material is cool and all, but what about She-Hulk and Rings of Power? What are those? You'll need to inform me.
Well, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
She-Hulk? Ooh.
She-Hulk?
Rings
is
of
that,
Power? Was that like a Tolkien?
I don't know. We're not sure of these things of which you speak.
Yeah.
We're here for our analysis. We don't know what those are.
The hatchling defense. No, this is a different thing, yes. It's the inverse where you show how riding the tiger you are by being completely ignorant of the current thing. I think it's
I'm gonna say the actual people out there who are as you see riding the tiger actually do not know what She-Hulk is.
No, because they're too busy like fitting people's kitchens and like doing groundworks and stuff like that.
Yeah. And they
just
spend
being fried
their week
folk that like make money out of scrap metal or something.
They spend their weekends in like a Kaczynski cabin making like ridiculous art out of soapstone.
Yeah,
and harvesting the cabbages. That's what those people. That's what the actual.
But no, it's. I saw this article as well in previous. I think possibly even last week at one point, there was some Reuters stuff and some noise here, there, and everywhere that. Basically Ukraine has decided no, we have to have. We're going to have to deal with some kind of.
A negotiation.
Yes,
with
that's the
Putler.
They're going to have to negotiate with Putler. The American government, how long has it been? 2 decades? We don't negotiate with terrorists?
Yeah.
That's all you do.
As I said, we're not going to go a deep dive on this. Russia's getting the Donbass. They're getting Donetsk and Luhansk. That's why they're withdrawn from Cohesion. That's why they're going back within their new borders. They will posit this as a Russian surrender. But really, this is the territory being ceded, essentially them admitting that they've run out of political and, in some ways, financially material
never
ways
mind
to persecute this war.
Political capital or how Ukraine looks to the West. But, I mean, did Putin not basically bomb the entire nation's power grid? And they still don't have power in large sectors or internet in large sectors of Ukraine? It's basically now a non-functioning country.
Basically, Ukraine has been left as a giant, collapsed, failed state, as the US kind of wanted. And it's there really as just another Afghanistan that they can funnel militants into to cause a headache for Russia. I mean, was all the political wrangling from the weird 2014 revolution of dignity worth it? I wonder how the Ukrainians feel about all this, about all the...
But it's all right. Look at this Azov Battalion Fash Wave montage.
Yeah. My fellow Ukrainian white brothers. I wonder how all those people who've lived through, you know, how long's it been now? I don't even know. Nearly a year of bombing at this point. Feel about the fact that they have just been geopoliticked. Guys.
I can sort of imagine Rumsfeld and Bush and, you know, Obama sitting there in 2014 looking over Ukraine and thinking, you know, that's a good buffer zone, and sort of Obama and his political youth at the time thinking, doesn't look much like a buffer zone, and the sort of Bush and Rumsfeld tapping him on the shoulder, like, don't worry, it'll look like one soon.
Well, it's the corrupt hole through which they use the European corrupt hole, because they also use Libya now after they turn that into a failed state as well magically.
Yeah, and our Brian Ian
after
the
another
chat.
Defense of democracy and rebuilding.
That's someone else. You tards have no idea what you're talking about. No, you're right, JB. We should go read the Reuters articles word for word that are saying big Zelensky chungus is winning. And Russia's going to fall apart. Putin's going to be ousted from his government tomorrow. He's got brain cancer and ass cancer, according to 4chan. So it's all over. I mean, I found it hilarious how many things went from being like Wignat Ukraine cope on 4chan to mainstream news within a couple of days. I think if anything, that's something we might have to go back and like recover, because I'm not sure everyone really noticed that that was going on at the time.
Russia's going to collapse any day now, guys. Trust me. It's going to happen. It's happening any second now. And no one's going to happen yet. Now there's going to be a negotiated settlement, and essentially the breakaway regions are going to be given to Putin.
What should have happened in 2014?
Yeah,
when he's going to have referendums on the whole thing, and Crimea decided they didn't want to be a part of Ukraine anymore.
The people who believe that remind me of the people who insist that Trump's going to be arrested any day now. It's that kind of vibe. I don't understand why people. It's again, we're not saying there's going to be some glorious victories. Ukraine has always kind of been much less of a deal than it's been made out to in the mainstream. Yeah. It has always been kind of a weird, like, wet fart, Eastern Euro territorial pissing contest, just slightly bigger Georgia conflict.
Mm.
That's kind of what it was. Oh, Russia underperforms in military operation, but effectively achieves its smaller goals at greater cost to itself. They've been doing that for the past 100 years in many ways.
Well, no, all I have to do is think about people I know who have been discussing this issue, and they have not been, you know, they've done what we, you know, do at times, and I think we should all do, which is we have conclusions that we jump to, and a lot of the times they're right, but you spend at least some amount of time delving through every possible option, you know, oh, well, maybe it's Russian media spin, maybe it's this, that, or the next thing, and then you, after long enough, you can't help but come to the conclusion that these pro-Ukrainian sources are making up and it's nonsense. And I think I mentioned it a few weeks ago. There was a fantastic stream from Samuel Gog where he responded to some sort of online personality that seems to have cropped up because he engages in Ukraine warfare analysis. Who knows where he's come from? But after doing that, he's had all sorts of mass flagging and weird people showing up in his comments and his Telegram chats, so I don't know. It all seems a bit strange to me.
Unless you've actually been there yourself and assessed the situation on the ground, you don't actually know what's going on. Well, it's all fourth-hand speculation anyway.
What makes it even funnier, though, is like one of the specific things that this guy that Samuel Gog was responding to had suggested was that, well, you know, the Russian military's getting no supplies because the soldiers don't carry camping beds. What does he think they do when they're out on patrol in the middle of the night? They get up and set up a whole camp. I mean, like, what kind of What kind of military operations have you ever even read about whereby, oh yeah, you know, we're out on patrol and this, that, and the next thing in the middle of the woods, and we decided to set up a full camp for the evening with campfires and loads of food, and we did this, that, and the next thing. We did a grand old time in the middle of a war zone on patrol. No, you don't. You sleep in a bag next to a tree in the cold, because that's how the military works. It's just, it's funny how all, even the people who are meant to be experts about all the Ukraine stuff are just spouting complete nonsense. It's the real icing on the cake.
Yeah.
To go on a completely different realm of story. We're going to get to something again. It's a new study from King's College London. But beforehand, I want to introduce you to one of my new, I think one of my new favourite, lol, Ivan's schooled semi going to need school, both of you. I don't know who you are, but you're getting fucking papped out.
It's one of those weird people that we've, yeah.
We do not need weird, like, UK cope in the chat. But, there's this... On to more important subjects. The study we'll be looking at is by a guy called Bobby Duffy from King's College London, by a professor of public policy and director of the Policy Institute, supposedly seconded to the Prime Minister's strategy unit during the Blair government. However, I could find no reference to this anywhere on the Blair government's Wikipedia page or anywhere else. Aye. When I was looking him up after the study, which we'll get to because that's the meat and bones, there was this just article he's written for the Sunday Times earlier on this year, and it is the worst thing I've ever read. So we're all going to suffer through it together.
Oh, okay, to quickly talk about the whole controlled collapse thing, we've gone through the financial stuff, we talked about some of the weird psyop, essentially fake war stuff, because good lord, so much is just completely fake out of Ukraine. And the fact that they've just deliberately collapsed that entire country for fun, essentially. Here we go into what is kind of the weird neoliberal veneer over it, which is, yes, things are collapsing, but line in many places still go up. We invent line, we graph thing that we invent, therefore thing go up. Mm. This is the ultimate like 2022 neoliberalism. I've read this and you read this so good. If you intro it, because you found this.
My 10-year-old daughter has a highly effective trick for staying up later than we'd like. She'll simply tell us that the pretty tame movie we're watching has just scared her so much that she needs a bit of normal telly to calm down. Can't even imagine thinking like that, to be honest. But this tried and tested technique backfired horribly recently when the normal telly we watched was the News at 10, and she was shocked into ashen-faced silence by the relentless portrayal of a country and world in terminal decline. Ashen-faced. Well, interesting choice of words.
I'm going to say it's... well done. You've noticed the fear porn.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
This is not her usual news exposure, which is limited to the more upbeat news round. But from that experience...
Gotta keep the propaganda in the correct propaganda channels.
Yeah. She knew there would at least be an "and finally" segment that would send her bed happy. God, you know, your child can't sleep at night if there isn't some feel-good segment on the air. No, that's... Yeah, "and finally" segment that would send her bed happy. Not this time. No uplifting story about a newborn panda. Just drought warning and pleas to ration over water use as a segue into the weather.
Yeah, that all just kind of remember when it didn't rain for a little bit and the news lost its mind, and then it rained and it all disappeared, because that's how the fucking weather works.
Mm.
Remember that drought we didn't have?
Yeah. Unsurprisingly, my daughter is keen to never see the news again, and she's far from alone in that. Recent Reuters Institute study shows that selective avoidance of news has doubled in the past 5 years to 46% in the UK, and this is a problem. Supposedly, this will be a recurring thing in this article.
It's not that. Yeah, well, it's the whole thing of just, well, it's done its job. The purpose of a lot of the news for a large segment of the population is to make them tune out. It is to demoralise them. It's to a point that they don't really want to hear it. Not to like a stoic, you know, drop out, tend your garden kind of way. Like an ear-ringing, background noise PTSD, I want to curl up in the corner and play my Nintendo Switch way. That's what it's there for. It's there to confuse people and make people just drop out and be so unengaged they accept the goy slop that's given to them.
Yeah,
How is this news?
I didn't have the energy to try and convince my daughter that there are at least as many good news stories in the world and that it is a much better place than it has been in the recent past. I'm beginning to wonder, is this really your daughter? Thinking. But I would have
My
had a lot
wife's
of
son.
evidence to draw on. In 1950, when her grandparents were her age, 31,000 infants died before the first birthday. Now the figure is 3 in 1,000. Won't be that figure for long if the vax is anything to go by. The fact that the Scottish government is just taking babies that sometimes live 4 and 5 days before dying and just calling them stillborns. Because then you can't use...
Let's maybe there'd be a great way. Maybe we could ask find some comparison between infant mortality and mortality during certain trimesters with our modern practice of abortions and figure out how many infants are actually dying.
Yeah, that would be very interesting, actually. Yeah. Well, the statistics in the moment seem to be that roughly excess mortality is anywhere between 10% and 20%. In developed nations at the moment, which basically means year-on-year comparison, adjusting for population changes, an extra, 10%, nearly 20% of people are just dying for no apparent reason.
Well, they do the neoliberal life expectancy of birth back then was 65. Now it's 80. Now, yeah, because that's an infant mortality thing. Oh. And mostly now because we have, drugs that cost tens of thousands of pounds and ventilators where we keep these baby meat sacks who will be vegetables for the rest of their lives on life support. A lot of this is in the 1950s. They had the wherewithal and the dignity to allow unlivably disabled children to die. Now it's a faux pas.
I would actually say it's probably the other way around, really. But see, the thing for me as well is this is...
No, euthanasia is good, but we have to medically life support children until they become the vegetables.
But the thing for me I find interesting as well, but the infinite mortality thing is I, in a roundabout way, wonder if infant mortality was always just a bit of a scheme. Because it seems to me that once you clear that up as an issue... The inflationist sort of worldview maps perfectly onto human behavior from that point forward, but
yeah,
conversation for a different time. But there's just so much in here that's him professing every single tenet of the progressive worldview. He even goes on to talk about rewilding, which was only something that's come in the last year or so. And then I found this graph as well, which I've never seen anywhere before, and you think they would be touting this as a success in more places. But I would if that's a statistic to be trusted, over 30 years, the teenage pregnancy rate is a third of what it was before.
The thing is, they might just be factoring in the whole thing of 18 and 19 year olds who have kids, and the whole thing, this might just be a vector of the fact that the age of births has gone up massively and that people are delaying family more, because it used to be back in the 1950s.
Exactly what it is. It's also just the fact
this isn't unplanned teen pregnancies. This isn't early teen pregnancies. This is just teen pregnancies. This is anyone who is up to the age of 19. It seems this might just be a delaying of fertility thing. It's perfectly possible. Again, teen pregnancy as a category can mean many, many things.
But I it's no wonder that we have so many millennials and late zoomers who are completely purposeless and meaningless in life and have absolutely no direction whatsoever, because the main thing that they should probably be doing as normies and were doing in their late teens, they just aren't anymore. And of course, then progressives will celebrate this. The fact that you're having dysgenic children in a later age, if you're even having any, is something to be celebrated. We continue on. Society today is also much safer despite what we think and what we are told. The murder rate in the UK has declined substantially over the past 20 years.
because it massively spiked.
Well, yeah, I was actually going to say not just that, but also the fact that the very Blair government this guy possibly worked for completely fixed how they counted the statistics and the victimization rates.
What happened is we had a massive explosion in crime, and then they completely reclassified what crimes were and completely changed how they were counted. It's like I've been rewatching a little bit of The Wire, and you know, felonies become misdemeanors, misdemeanors get disappeared. Mm. You know, robberies and rapes become assaults and batteries. It's that kind of thing. It's juking the stats on an industrial scale. And everybody who knows about the Blair target system knows that that happened, and that these statistics are simply bunk. And it was talked about at the time. It was a massive news story, and people just seem to have forgotten about it.
Yeah, because this guy as well, and you'll notice this in the study we're going to look at in a bit, he likes taking statistics and not delivering to them to you plainly, but engaging in a bit of a switcheroo. Or yes. By basically being an elitist and being like, well, we asked the public to, and in the case, the one I'm just going to read here in a second, well, we asked the public to estimate something and they got it wrong, so they must all be retards. Some of the key explanations are clear from just one example. Our incredible misperceptions of teenage pregnancies. When you ask people to estimate what percentage of teenage girls give birth each year, which is a weird way to answer the question, what percentage of teenage girls give birth each year? The average guess in Britain is 19%, which is them roughly saying 1 in 5. But because he's asking each year, it doesn't really work, because their idea of that will be anyone across a wider bracket of time.
Yeah.
When the reality is about 1%. So here's this guy coming up with a bizarre way to clarify a statistic, getting people to give an over... sort of zealous estimate, because they're just thinking of, well, oh, you know, I know these five women and one of them had, you know, a child as a teenager, so maybe it's roughly 20%. And he's, oh no, it's actually 1%, which, you know, given the statistics we have up here,
but you're asking the general public with no context how long is a piece of string.
Mm.
They're guessing the wrong length, and you're saying the public can't be trusted to estimate anything, because the average person can't be trusted to measure, because I asked them how long my piece of string was and they couldn't tell me.
Mm.
It really is just like it's like a weird Kafka trap. It's like, tell me this fact. It's like, well, I don't have any reference points. It's they're plucking a figure out of the air that they seems reasonable.
Where did he get the statistics for this one here? I didn't even notice this earlier on.
1500 what? Nobody was literate in 1500.
I mean, to me, this is a bad thing anyway, but like...
I know, but still, it's funny.
Excuse me, source?
Line go up. Chart, the Times and Sunday Times. So they've done this themselves.
Yeah, and then also, of course, I want to take this graph here, and I want to relay the Doug Hansen reverse hockey stick. So that you can show that the perception of homosexuality becoming more acceptable rises as
literacy rates increase.
No, it doesn't rise as literacy rates increase. It rises as long as global temperature and the climate rises as well. Because obviously, if you lay one graph over the other and the trend lines are the same, then it must be the same.
You can't reverse the global temperature changes. That'll make people hate the gay. Oh dear, it's pure like neoliberalist, like scientist, you know, empiricism is what this is. It is them coming up with vague numbers that are their own regime numbers that, like, everybody knows that this shit isn't true.
And as someone suggested to me, as this we're getting the meat and bones here, that this is a study that could have been written for us. Yeah, really. We like some of our more schizo alternative theories. Whether or not we always discuss them on the stream is a different question, but let's put it this way. I distrust the fact that, say, for example, a random Asian guy with no military training in his young 20s could kill nearly 30 people in an American university with less than 40 rounds to his name, but that's a different question.
Yeah, that's different. But he's still a high score, you know. You say what you want about
theoretically a high score.
I'm going to allow it for now.
Yeah, no, Robert Thayer and chats get the right ideas. What were the perceptions of homosexuality in the 1500s?
What was the global temperature as well?
Yeah, exactly. It was ice cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is an entire study that I can't help but look at and think, my God, we're winning.
Here we go, the Policy Institute. And if you go to the top, the key part here is this was produced for BBC Radio 4 and BBC Podcast.
It's going to be on a panorama show at some point. But
yes.
It's so out there that it's like they've got to know. And they're, again, it's got to be another one of those ones where they're getting out ahead of what they may think is happening. So they're, you know, in your opinion... I believe this, yeah. Interviewed online UK adults aged 18 plus 4,500.
Well, you know what this might be? It might just be the phrasing of the question.
Yes.
They might consider that the Manchester Arena attack and 7/7 just weren't in recent years. Those were quite a while ago. what do you mean by recent years? It's such like 5 year old language. But it's true that the question itself makes a massive difference to the answers you will get back. It might just be that people's perception of time is slightly different. So I enjoy what you're saying out of this, that people just go, nah, the news is fake. It's all nothing's real. But it also could just be, well, I don't think that happened particularly recently. I have a different perception of time than you.
That's why it's so interesting, though, because when we'll get further through it, there is a portion where they directly talk about COVID, and it would seem as if, according to the data in here, that people are actually more willing to question something like 7/7 than they are COVID. Now, that could just obviously be because of the fact that COVID is now, and that 7/7 being nearly 20 years ago now, I believe I'm right in saying, you know, that was so long ago. Question it to your heart's content. Nobody cares. Who's going to get you in trouble for questioning it? But if you question COVID,
questioning fucking 7/7, yeah. It's very much is good evidence about the current thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But look at again the 18 to 34, 71%. They just might have a different perception of what recent years are. I'm sorry, yeah. But it's so badly formatted. It makes me angry.
But we know as well that this is going to be the kind of stuff that appears in next year's, you know, Hope Not Hate.
Yes.
A
considerable minority have doubts about the truth of terror attacks. To what extent at all do you agree with the following statements? There are so many conflicting accounts. Go back up. There are so many conflicting accounts of... goddammit, where is it? I've lost it in my... Yeah, there are so many conflicting accounts of big events like terror attacks or pandemics that it's difficult to know who to believe. 29% agree with that statement, apparently. But it's a very, again, it's a very easy statement to agree with because it's true. Well, there's such a fire hose of conflicting information, deliberately in many cases, to paralyze people that it is difficult to know what to believe. But they're framing it as these people do not entirely believe there is something. This country's broken. This should be 100%. What's wrong with these people?
Yeah,
that is how this is framed. So 2 in 5 say there are many conflicting accounts of big events like terror attacks. Or notice they say or pandemics. So they've bundled these two things together. They bundled together people's expected skepticism of a lot of the conflicting information that the regime has even admitted a lot of it was bunk to the normies. Although I hate that term. To the average, you know, to the public at large. And yet they bundled in terror attacks with pandemics deliberately here, because they want this number to be somewhat high. They're very much fishing for a certain conclusion. The conclusion is Britain's full of conspiracy theorists and needs re-education camps, is essentially what they're looking for this report to say. And see, they're getting that.
It's interesting as well. They've got the next one here. 1 in 4 think the truth about the Manchester bombings is being withheld, whatever the truth about it may ever be. And 1 in 7 believe, in brackets, crisis actors pretended to be injured or killed in the attack. I would be surprised if... I mean, I think too little of the normie, but 1 in 7 people know what a crisis actor is.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope so.
Well, the thing is, victims of terror attacks in the UK are not being truthful about what's happened to them.
Mm.
Well, the thing is, that can mean anything. It could mean that they're not speaking out more stringently against, you know, certain segments of the population because they're afraid.
Mm.
That's what that could mean. It could mean that victims of terrorist attacks are not as stringently, say, anti-mass immigration, because that's what happened to them.
Yeah, well, no, it gets even more interesting here, because this is something I think we talked about in the Hope Not Hate thing when we looked to it over earlier this year. That they seem to want to be aggressively going after political apathy. They made reference to it in the report. They made videos about it that were aimed to vaguely right center-right people, you know, earlier on this year. And they literally used the line like, well, if you don't believe in democracy, well, why would you think you can vote your way out of it? But we obviously look at it in the inverse of that. That, well, of course you can't vote your way out. But for them, they're like, well, how are you going to get out of it if you never vote? They're taking the whole thing and playing it backwards. But then they've gone and used that framing here.
Yeah, disengagement from the political process is associated with the greater likelihood of holding conspiracy beliefs about such attacks. So it's kind of like it's a weird, again, Kafka trap, chicken and egg thing in which disbelievers disbelieve.
Mm.
And disbelievers are evil. Therefore, if we get rid of disbelievers, people won't disbelieve. It's 5-year-old logic. It's kind of what is being said here is very, very nursery rhyme in its logic. But it's you can see where they're going with it. You're right.
See, there's Chuck M in chat saying, people believe crisis actors were killed. That's not even a valid thing to think, lol. Actually, it's not a bad way to go about it. Hire crisis actors and then tie up the loose ends with the attack. I hadn't considered that before, but thanks for mentioning it.
What's happening here is they are playing into some of the inbuilt community belief biases within, say, Muslim communities, immigrant communities, but also native communities, virus-skeptic communities.
What is the most interesting thing on this slide, though? Because I've only just noticed this.
What is it?
It's not that the people that didn't vote disbelieved at a higher rate. Intuitively, that makes sense. But that on every single question, the more skeptical group was the Labour base, not the Tory base.
It's because they're Muslims saying this.
There you go. There's a whole other angle that I hadn't considered to this whole thing is that, well, you know, what if Muslims just believe that, it was a psyop and it was a false flag. It was actually a white dude that did it.
Yeah. Like that's where this is coming from. What they're doing is they're bundling the pandemic stuff together with the inbuilt stuff. Like most of the Islamic world doesn't believe that America landed on the moon and things like that.
Mm.
It's the like disbelief in a Western narrative is extremely normal among Islamic solutions, and look for the word Muslim, look for the word Islam in this document. The word Muslim or Islam does not appear, but that's who these people are. The people who don't believe something like the 7/7 attack happened are Muslims.
Yes,
that's where this is coming from. And to be fair, I understand their skepticism when it comes to the fact that they have been used as both an integrator and agitating vector on the British public.
Mm.
If the British Muslim community is some of like the most heavily psyoped people in this country, because they kind of have to be, because they are both saint and devil. They are used in multiple different ways as like a political cudgel against the traditional population.
You get further on here as well, and to add to what you're suggesting, you can get to slide 19 here. Certain sections of the UK are far more likely to think some US school shootings are probable hoaxes. And then,
but they're talking about two different things here. The people who believe that school shootings may have been hoaxes are not the US school shootings may have been hoaxes. Are not the same people who think that the Manchester bombing may have been a hoax. Because, like I said, those people are British Muslims, and these people are, you know, the UKQ, the Alex Jones watches a lot of them. They're people who get kind of the overspill of a lot of the skits boomer stuff. Mm. Or there might be people just in our circles like, I don't trust anything. It's weird that they bundled together British Muslims, And the large kind of immigrant population doesn't believe a lot of the narratives around Islamic terrorism. They've bundled in the pandemic stuff with that, and now they're bundling in kind of the British Alex Jones watchers. These are completely different
Well,
groups with often diametrically opposed beliefs on certain
look at the one
events.
here about US school shootings. Ethnic minority backgrounds almost represent three times more than white ethnic backgrounds that say that it's definitely or probably true that some school shootings in the United States have been hoaxes.
I changed my mind. Inshallah, brothers. We'll be meeting at the community center at 10.
Well, and then you've got the classic as well on page 22. Nearly a third of the public think the UK government's covered up terror attacks, while a quarter believe the US government either assisted in 9/11 or took no action to stop it. Again,
Only a quarter.
I will see. Again, though, there is this level of vagary going on here about, well, what percentage of this is people saying actually no, the 9/11 was a complete op from the start, and it was done to make Muslims look bad, but from a different angle.
The thing is, you've got different people, again, different belief groups here that they're trying to use to buff these numbers. Over a third think there's a deep state, other secret groups that really control society.
From who's the organization that's, the deep state is doing this study? The guy that's involved in this is the same kind of people that have been involved in your nudge units and all the
This
stuff
is
that came out during COVID.
from the policy unit. He was in Blair's government, and he's doing this for the BBC. And he's talking incredulously about the people who think the deep state isn't like, this. You are the deep state.
My brother and Allah, you are the deep state. But then there's a great one here towards the end as well. A third say the pandemic has made them more suspicious of official explanations of terror attacks. Now, if this is true, that I mean, I can't not look at that and think that, where unless this is like bullshit statistics are coming up to make us the kayfabe enemy, then this is a sign of the fact that what we're doing has at least some sort of effect on people.
Possibly, I think that there's also a kayfabe. Like they're really trying to boogeyman this. Like this is a really the thing is, it's very hard to know whether genuinely there has been an effect or there has been a much smaller effect, but they're trying to amplify it, much like they did with a lot of the QAnon stuff in the US. Because as we all know, the US government was very, very, very heavily involved in spreading a lot of the QAnon stuff to
Because
kind of bolster up the insurrection
here's a
narrative.
strange
Also,
question.
Brian E, my reply to that is just mashallah.
But they then take the people who agreed to the above statement, they answer ask them a further question, and one of those questions they ask them is, it's an important part of my identity to question what I'm told rather than just believe explanations from the government or mainstream media. Now, as to go really hard on schizo theories, there is a lot of conversation, at least I've seen in different places, from UNZ, Ron Unz report, and early Alex Jones stuff, that Sandy Hook was one of the first times that the US deep state actually engaged in misinformation cat sort of campaigns around a specific event. And that is how they prototyped a lot of the stuff they engage with now, which is why when it happens nowadays, you get, half a dozen different versions of the story, and then bits and pieces are cut off at either ends of these versions till it comes down like a singular sort of story that may or may not be believable, may or may not be true or false. But in a certain sense, it means that instead of quelling and destroying all other possible sources that allow you to question the mainstream narrative, instead of just giving you a mainstream narrative, they give you that narrative and then three and then four and then five other ones to go along with it. So that you are, much like QAnon could be viewed, you're sort of brought along through this kind of thing that teaches you about all the different conspiracy theories and you think you're onto the truth. and then it wraps back round and you end up contained back in the place you started with. And I wonder if the asking this them asking this question is them trying to discern what level the population out there is not just receptive to alternative information, but can be, you know, brought in with that and brought back around.
Yeah, they can be turned into the pure reactionary who by disbelieving believes.
Yes.
They can become the yes is no, and they can turn it around by essentially informationally reverse psychologizing some of these people.
Is it the Stephen Paddock
stuff? A lot of the
stuff,
yeah.
About the fact that, like, oh, well, maybe he was part of the Islamic State and he visited Thailand and some Saudi guy was staying at the hotel on the same night and this, that, and the next thing. These might be true, but at the end of the day, it doesn't answer the question of how does he get 300 odd pounds of gear up the elevator through the freight thing without access to it, and how does he take a hurricane grade 5 window frame at a building? Those are the real questions, but instead everyone ends up on all the other stuff about, well, who was the Saudi dignitary and what were they involved in and what money was going on. And it's the same with all these things, and some of it's relevant, some of it's not, but I think it goes to show that there was always a muddiness around these things anyway, but that certain elements of the government realised that instead of covering it up, just make it muddier.
Yeah, that's what this is what they said. You don't have to disprove something. You don't have to have complete hegemonic control over the narrative. You just have to kick enough dust up that people are confused.
Mm.
And that they look at the situation and go, well, we'll never really know, and then walk away. That's all you need to do, even with very egregious cases. That all you do is, it's like the JFK thing. It's like in the 90s, like we watched X-Files and stuff.
Mm.
But in the 1990s and the late 80s, the US government very, very strongly kind of leaned into a lot of the conspiracy stuff that had come up around the time of Waco as a relief valve of creating like an alternate reality of people who would spend their days hunting JFK's brain rather than talking about the fact that the sniper at Ruby Ridge and the sniper at Waco was the same person who was never charged.
Mm.
there's a lot of other stuff in here too. What I think is important is something we try and highlight here, and I don't think we've said it explicitly in these terms, is when we look at news stories, a lot of them are lies, but a lot of them are lies that are not meant to be believed.
Mm.
They are lies that are meant to elicit a particular reaction. A lot of the commentary channels, I don't know single people out, but a lot of the kind of skeptical sides of YouTube, as it were.
The Beanie Mans of the world.
Yeah,
the Beanie
Men and the Grim Reaper Doorknocker or meme people. Those types look at these stories and go, wow, look at these lies that the government wants us to believe. I'm going to believe this. But the point of a lot of these stories is not to get you to believe the story. The point of the story is to elicit a particular reaction. That's what I went into when I talked about the whole permissible activism thing, that especially with the rainbow stuff, the LGBT stuff, that is not meant for you to like it.
Mm.
Nobody likes it. Nobody looks at that and goes, this is normal, this is healthy, apart from maybe a tiny, tiny segment of like mentally broken, low-level activists that the regime hates anyway and has disdain for. It's to elicit a particular reaction. And that's what this is about. And you're right, maybe measuring, but I think that's such an important distinction that most people don't understand, that it's not binary, this is true, this is false, and the opposite is true. It is, this isn't true, but this isn't true in a very particular way, and it's meant to elicit a very particular reaction from you. And by reacting in like the first way you usually think of to react to a story is usually wrong. It's usually the exact kind of the emotional shortcut response is how you're supposed to receive it. And to analyze that and kind of remove that first reaction and go deeper into it is what we really try and do, and what a lot of people consistently fail to do, to the point that they do base their identities about it's the old meme about being for the current thing and being against the current thing is kind of the same, because if you're just against the current thing, that's usually what they want from you in terms of the Oh, what is it? The dialectic? The dialectic is for and against the current thing, rather than a lot of the time you need to step outside the current thing, or as we keep saying, the current thing is a psyop. Don't be against the current thing. Believe the current thing is a psyop.
Yeah,
it's usually the best way to go.
I find it weird as well that they try and towards the end here, they try and engage in like some kind of categorization, and I don't know if these are. If this is meant to be like a measure of severity or an attempt to make people read this and think of these things as like different operations and different events when everyone knows who knows their stuff that all three of these could all be happening at the same time around any event. And the elements of an event could be hoaxed as part of a cover-up to get rid of other government involvement somewhere. You know, like the classic being some of the Boston Marathon bombing stuff, where there was lots of weird stuff about whether or not there was a shootout at a gas station, whether or not the team that arrested the guy happened to all die on a helicopter training incident 2 weeks later, whether or not the brothers that did the Boston bombings, the Tsarnaevs, were involved in some bizarre CIA operation with her father and training militants in Balkan regions or whatever it was. You know, ignore all that stuff. He blew up people at the Boston Marathon. And we have CCTV footage that's blurry of him being there, just like we have passports at Ground Zero.
Well, there's, again, that the way that they're analysing this information is bizarre, and you're right. I think this is meant to be a severity thing. I think cover-up, government involvement in a cover-up and then an outright hoax is meant to be kind of a severity. It's like, well, people believe there might have been a cover-up, but they're not quite sure who. Then people believe the government did it, then they just believe in an outright hoax. That's kind of, I think that's supposed to be like a severity pipeline, but also kind of like separated categories in which they try and categorise these beliefs. But again, you have the COVID stuff folded in here. And then this slide here, the strongly accept group stands out as the biggest believers of specific conspiracies. Hardcore minority of 1 in 11 people can be classified as strongly accepting most or all of 11 conspiracy statements. You know who these people are? I've said it before. These are the UK Muslims. This is the 9% of UK Muslims. Look at the statements they all agree with. It's to do with the Manchester terror attacks and the terror hoaxes. It is in an entrenched belief in that community that the UK government is not honest about the Islamic terror.
Well, it's not even that they're not honest about it. It's that they're actually probably willing to falsely use it as a way to attack white and right-wing notions and ideas and identities. As always.
But a lot of people don't realize
that. Use someone else's extremism to attack another form.
Oh, it is. Well, they're doing this very, very easily here because they're not labeling the groups. They're folding the...
Well, they do actually have... I mean, they've got other statistics here, but they do actually have a demographic breakdown at the end of the study. However, I actually can't understand it. I don't know what it's trying to tell me.
Well, it's the fact that they don't do it per capita. They don't actually show you what percent of the group was each ethnicity. So these numbers don't make any sense. There's no baseline to compare it to. Was the sample 91% white or was it 99% white? Because if it was 99% white, that means that there's an outsized number who strongly accept. But if it was, you know, 72% white, that means that it's outsized another way. It doesn't. We're not given an actual demographic breakdown of who was surveyed, so that those numbers are effectively meaningless because you have nothing to compare them to. There's no control. There's no.
See, I think if you probably had money to throw at it, you could probably get access to the raw data set. But even then, who knows what that would be able to tell you? But just I find it funny that you've got all these kind of things, and they decide not to be specific about what group is seeing what, and then they get to the end and they have demographic statistics that just don't make sense whatsoever.
Yeah, those are deliberately unanalyzable because you don't have a baseline.
Well, anyway, onto completely different story, however slightly related in the sense that, well,
Well, I just wanted to say that this report is an attempt to tie up in a bow all of the disc groups with different axes to grind who believe things outside of the cultural and kind of informational norm. This is a very, very wide broadside on all of those who have even a niche area of belief does not fall into the window of what is acceptable. And it is a very clear indicator that this will be kind of the final frontier. But you, this is one you found. I think it's really funny. So we have a little bit of time, so.
Well, no, this is obviously they've not got the memo, so they can't make their mind up. And we don't know if it's disinformation conferences or democracy conferences, but
I think it's both that they're both the same thing now. Information control is democracy. Is democracy.
we'll see. It's all right anyway, because the boys are back in town. It's your
Yes.
favorite ex-presidents.
The adults are back in the room. The
Yeah, that's the one.
rehabilitation of
The
George W.
adults
Bush.
are in
Yeah.
charge.
That's why we had them on the thumbnail. But yeah, former President Bush, Obama to hold back-to-back democracy conferences is the Axios headline, the Daily Mail headline for its slightly different audience, because democracy is the big keyword in America right now. So in Britain, it was George W. Bush and Barack Obama will hold back-to-back disinformation conferences following Trump's big announcement on Tuesday, but organizers say it wasn't. Yeah, sure. So they're coinciding with a Trump announcement that hasn't been made yet. And they're doing it in sync with each other, but it wasn't planned. Okay. Did you want to get into this story, though?
I mean, there's not really much else to get into. I think we'll probably have some interesting clips from these when they happen. I do find it funny that, like, they've had to resurrect George Bush via some form of
Yeah.
seance so that he can have a conversation with CGI Zelensky.
Yes.
It's
He's
Detective
apparently.
Inspector CGI Zelensky.
This is the same story that most people probably saw the story from CNN that we've got here. That this is the same conference, his democracy disinformation conference, that the President Chungus will be present at.
Oh no, I
George
just
W.
think
Bush
it's
talking to Zelensky for an hour straight about how unjustified unilateral invasions are wrong.
the struggle for freedom conference, comrade.
Shall we? Shall we play? Yeah.
There was a David J. Kramer of the Bush Institute said it was terrific that two presidents would be focusing on similar topics, saying, "We are very mindful of what's happening in the United States, and we have to make sure we stay on a democratic path. At the
Welcome to the
same
Uniparty,
time,
pal.
we have to help and support others around the world, so we can't simply fold up our tent and focus on everything at home. We have to focus on both things."
Internet, the democracy within and democracy without, yes.
Well, you can't have
The
one without the
Uniparty
other.
marches everyone onwards. Yes, of
There
course.
can be no democracy without the democracy within. There can be democracy within without the democracy without.
We must. It's amazing that it's really just funny because I used to get slated by certain people in certain circles for not being on the Obama train many years ago, back when I used to talk to people who were politically illiterate. But they were very annoyed with me because I always maintained that the Obama administration was just Bush's third and fourth term, because there was complete continuation between those two regimes.
I'm just going to read this one sentence
Go
alone
for it.
from here. "This will be the first public discussion between Zelensky, whose participation will be virtual, and the former president, following a private meeting they had earlier this year. After the initial meeting, Bush called Zelensky the Winston Churchill of our time."
I bet he is. Yeah, he too has completely destroyed his country for American interests. It's oh dear me. Democracy.
Democracy manifest.
Manifest.
But yeah, no, there's a nice everyone's about their Biden gaffes these days, but we're gonna go for an OG Bush gaff.
Some part of me feels like this is almost like ritual humiliation tier.
But he looks so different in this to the picture in the article. That's all I'm saying.
In contrast,
Yeah, he does. He
Russian elections
has
are rigged.
aged quite heavily. He's slightly melty bush there, but let's get the let's play the clip. Eliminated.
So we'll go back to the start.
Volume up, volume decan as well, because it's a little bit quiet.
Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process. The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia, and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine. Iraq, anyway. 75.
How many millions dead was it again? We'll just...
Possibly three?
Yeah, just it's funny. And then in the same vein, as the collapse continues in the UK, nearly half of Home Office staff are still working from home, with just 54% of desks at its London HQ occupied during the week.
It's the case of just that the house always wins, kind of the theme of this. The house always wins, and this is the house. The uniparty of Obama and of Bush talking about the unjustified invasion of Iraq. Because everyone knows the parallels, everyone knows the hypocrisy, but pointing the hypocrisy out does nothing but highlight their power.
In a sort of roundabout way, if I can add to what you're saying there, it really goes to show that the paradigm that we are living in really was set 9/11 just after. So it is no surprise that Tony Blair is constantly in our news. George Bush is back in the news. Obama's back in the news. They're doing these important conferences, and I'm sure we'll have all sorts of statements from them, and they'll be making media appearances, and we'll hear more from the Bush Institute. You know, they are having to go back and cling to the sentiment of fresh prince that is innate behind these leaders, even though Obama was only 6 years ago he left office now. It feels like a completely different world to the one we are living in now.
Yes.
And they're having to stretch all the way back to this for the normies to reassure them that it's okay. Just remember what we had.
People actually have nostalgia for the Bush administration.
Mm.
I mean, there's like the fucking Chris Reagan, put me back in Halo 2 types. Like, I just want to sit in my room, listen to Breaking Benjamin and play Halo 2 forever. And I want the calendar to show that it's 2004. And that is the idea of many people's paradise. That is what people live for. If you offered that to a large segment of people who are aged, say, 28 to 32, they would take it. They would bite your hand off for it. They would cry and weep in with joy. We have another donation here from Glow in the Dark. Says, "Or it is a fight for freedom. They are fighting which freedoms to allow to have and how they can censor it if it goes against them." I guess you just mean generally, but yeah, it really is like the hegemony showing itself a bit more, the uniparty. But the story at hand, to get back on track with the Home Office, is that if you're in the public sector, the furlough never ended.
Mm. And it probably never will.
No. It's this is the, again, this is the UBI. We effectively have had a UBI in this country for quite a long time. Arguably, since we had unemployment payments, but we very much have it in a concentrated manner since the public sector was basically allowed to continuously work from home.
Here's the general sort of statistics that they've got in this graph here. Data from civil service shows that the daily average staff working back at their desks. That's quite a sizable number of people from the DWP, DFT, that'll be bloody...
Look at the...
Transport and that. But 80% of people are back for the Cabinet Office because they all get paid a mint wage. But Home Office, you know, these other upwards of nearly 40% of people just not showing up for work. And this is, of course, around the exact same time as we talked last week about... immigration's back in the news, and it's only the Labour Party that's really going to talk about it because they're forcing it through the vector of ID. We've just had the attack on the migrant centre in Dover a couple of weeks ago. I mean, look at the heartbreaking pictures of all the new doctors and engineers and nuclear and rocket scientists that have arrived on our shores, and we've given them blankets because the river's so cold.
A lot of it is also just admission that large parts of the bureaucracy are unnecessary in a subsidy. These people are not working. Like, these people never worked anyway. If you've ever seen or known anyone who works in a public sector job, those people don't actually work. They don't do a day's work in their lives. In fact, I know from some experience with people who've worked with Bolton Council that the main cause of absence there is stress. And the main cause of stress is people worrying they'll be discovered that they don't do any work. Like, being forced to pretend to work is actually really stressful. I wouldn't want to do it. It's miserable. It sounds miserable. And a lot of people are going, oh yeah, that sounds great, but really you can't completely abandon the pretense of work. So you have to pretend to work, but you also can't actually do any meaningful work. So you're stuck in this weird limbo. Maybe that's just why civil servants how are they are.
It's the classic Soviet Union joke. Three guys are in jail and they're all discussing how they got there. And
yeah,
one guy says, you know, I used to show up for work late and they arrested me for taking advantage of the rest of the proletariat by not putting in my own, you know, effort. And then the other guy's like, well, yeah, I used to turn up to work early and they said I was being an overachiever and I was wanting more than I'm worth. And that, again, was a sin against the proletariat. And then the third guy says, well, yeah, I used to turn up for work on time, so they arrested me for having a Western watch.
That's pretty good. So it's a good joke. But no, the 54% not at the 46% not at their desks is a great sign of the managed decline during a supposed crisis period. But again, this is like a weird, almost limited hangout about this. It's like, we need to make the home office workers start, you know, work at their desks. It's just like, no, you're thinking about the wrong struggle there. It's like, if a few of those Calais dinghies ended up as Viking funerals, we'd see a lot less of them pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking more, how's about you fire everyone that's working in the home office? I'll go up to Wigan with a placard and a couple of grand in my back pocket, and we'll you know, forward pay 50, 100 locals, and we'll be like, right, down to Dover, we're going to get this sorted in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Everyone will get their pay booked and they come back.
I'll go to the dole queue and I'll find everyone who looks like they could lift more than their own body weight. we'll just take him down to Dover in a big coach. Yep. The problem will be sorted overnight. It's
Baz Defence Force.
The Baz Defence Force. Imagine what you could do with the Home Office budget, but funneled into Baz's. the country would be unrecognizable overnight. But we're not allowed to be effective. We're only allowed to have Home Office workers working from home. In Zoom meetings with their kids screaming in the background. You've experienced that when you had somebody you were trying to talk to about. So it was something quite serious, if I remember correctly, and they had some fucking kids just screaming in the background. You're like, excuse me, I can't hear you for your screaming kids. That's quite unprofessional. And they were so offended by that.
That
you would expect them to not have to have some sort of.
It was one of the NHS, like, they've segmented a lot of the admin stuff for the NHS now to, like, people who have basically got contracts not written up yet, but are already declared as, like, people who will just forever work from home. So yeah. You phone up the appointments thing, you're like, yeah, I've got, you know, I think it was when I was trying to do that bloody DEXA bone scan thing. And I was like, you know, can you... you need to phone up to confirm with them, so you've got to give them a number and a date and time and your details and this, that, and the next thing. And the whole time, all I could hear was,
yeah, you're trying to talk to her about having osteoporosis and she can't shut her fucking kids up for a second to take your appointment seriously. It's so fallen, is what it is. People have no expectations of being professional.
No. And then top off, Jeremy Hunt says all Britons will pay higher taxes after autumn statement. So you've got your whole thing here of looking at this as like a Cameroonian maneuver towards just, you know,
austerity's back, boys. The holding pattern.
Not just the declined or managed decline, but making people accept managed decline. And not by telling them that it's going to be good, it's just by telling them that you've not got another option.
The country is broke. You are in pain. Any efforts to cut taxes will end in disaster, as we performatively showed you with the trust government. The adults are back in the room. We're out of money. Russia did it. Don't look at the pandemic borrowing. We saved the country with it, though. It's just going to be pain and misery until we cycle back in Labour, and then we're gonna sing Derive, things gonna get better again.
Yeah,
and that's what this is. The Conservative Party, like I said, putting themselves in a miserable holding pattern, like Cameron did. That's God. All the Cameron government Here, was. They tried to the, do that whole.
Here's the narrative cleanup, though. Hunt is expected to set out tax rises and spending cuts worth about $55 billion a year as he seeks to fill a gaping hole in the public finances. A hole doesn't quite describe it, pal.
And regain the UK fiscal credibility after former Prime Minister Liz Truss's disastrous... Yeah, it's basically one mini-budget destroyed the UK economy. Mm. And it's nothing to do with anything else. I think as we successfully showed during that pension stream, that is so far from the case, it's incredulous. It's laughable.
Lady of Charlotte in chat saying, you know, who the hell is Jeremy Hunt? I presume she knows who he is, but... He is one of the members of the Tory party that I think I would be correct in saying is part of the, you know, your 1922 committee day-to-day actually running of the party. Same with, who's the one that had some Gwynon book, or not Gwynon, he had a couple of David Irving books in his bookshelf, and it was all based, not Jeremy Hunt, but the other one.
I'm not sure. Mog?
No. I don't know. You blather up this for a second. I'll find out who it was.
Well, like David Davis or someone like that. No. They're all identical. Gove?
Gove, that's the one.
Michael Gove?
Yes.
Yeah, Hunt, he's the same team. Yeah.
Hunt is like a Gove character insofar as he's part of the, you know, as I say, like the 1922 committee. He's part of the inner party. And as a
Gove
complete
is just
mainstay.
Hunt if you change like the character creator chin and hair sliders.
Yeah, basically.
He has the same like weird Bullingdon Club inbreeding.
Yeah, Robert Thay in the chat. Hunt's father was an admiral of the fleet, 100% establishment stooge. Of course he was.
Yeah. Gove. Hunt, all those people are part of the 1922 committee. They are the people who really run the Conservative Party and therefore are genuinely in political power. They parachuted in Sunak because he is their great Brahmin hope, who's not even a Brahmin and not even Indian. He's a Pakistani merchant.
What he is, though, is a scapegoat.
yes, he is. That he has had a meteoric rise to be the fall guy. When, like I said, as we keep saying to you, Starmer's being cycled in, and the austerity era of British conservatism, in quotes, was deeply unpopular. It eroded. It was just like this slow death of enthusiasm after people finally decided that they just couldn't take New Labour anymore. They couldn't take Gordon Brown.
I see the line in this article here. Sound money has to come first. Now, I'll admit this is a bit of a reach, but we saw in the thing we were reading the other week, out of nowhere, they pulled out this term, you know, that it was Britain's sovereign currency. It was a sovereign fund, so we can use it in X form.
Sovereign UBI, yes.
Well, it makes me
UBI stuff.
It makes me wonder whether or not to continue on like the facade that Brexit has become now. That the way we truly separate ourselves from Europe and have a sovereign, sound money as some form of digital pound. Which we know is coming anyway. It's just trying to discern what ways they're going to continually bring it about. And I think, given the way things are going, it will be associated partially with that kind of full right shift and that there will be scope to have some libertarian weirdos on UK news in a couple of years to tell us about how it's all going to be digital gold. Sound money because it's digital gold.
Okay.
Well, we know it's all nonsense, yeah. But I can already sort of foresee it coming down the pipes anyway.
There's many different tendrils to this, but yeah, I just wanted to highlight that this is going to be, until the next election, which Starmer will win handily, that is the political script. Unless there is some kind of actual upset they have to react to, there is some actual event that they have to kind of tweak the plan. The current plan is, this is the kayfabe, that that Starmer wins. Labour gets in, they'd have a new Labour moment. He's been rehabilitated very heavily in the press, and they're going to use that as an excuse to put in place a lot of the uniparty stuff we talked about. Like I said, the entire thing is the controlled demolition, and what will happen is that the breaks, the misery facade will come off, the fear porn will lift. We'll have kind of a 1997 to 2001 moment where there will be some sort of false dawn in the UK. There will possibly even be, once we've had this like sovereign era of currency, a referendum to rejoin the EU. I am convinced that they are going to performatively at some point reverse Brexit, just as an act of humiliation. It's been so built up, they kind of have to.
Well, see, I'm still...
That's the season finale.
Yes, I'm still very much of the opinion that it doesn't really matter because you get globalism either way.
No, you do get globalism either way, but I think that they have to... Like they had to do with the Trump stuff, we're not going to really talk about the midterms, but with they have to do it. I think that they have spent so much political capital saying what a disaster it is, and berating the British public. They're going to go back to the electorate and say, right, you're going to tell us that you were wrong. Like, we're going to strong arm you. We're going to put you through so much pain that you have to come back and say, we're sorry for voting wrong. I think the political class is currently in many ways obsessed with that. They just want that moment. And at some point over the next decade, they're going to have it. They're going to have that moment, by hook or by crook. But before that, we're going to get Starmer. That's going to come under a Labour government, possibly with some kind of weird agreement for semi-independence with the SNP. Because I'm still convinced that they're going to head that off at the pass and have them. In fact, it even might be an argument of saving the union they use. You never know. That's in their back pocket too. But yeah, that's my current script. Yeah, this is an obvious trajectory. This has been worked on for the past few years. It's not obvious to everyone, though. I think a lot of people still genuinely believe that there is some form of British politics.
Well, yeah, you can say that, and we would agree with you that this has been obvious if you know where to look. But there's still a subset of people who, without making accusations as to whether or not they are illegitimate or agitative actors, who will tell you you're a schizo for trying to connect these dots. So I think in a certain sense, us going through it and kind of babies first connect the dots sometimes is quite useful, because for those who haven't kept up or aren't aware or haven't been able to connect to things themselves, it's very useful. And even for those people who do know and can make educated assumptions as to what's happening, can't always then come back to what we've done and go, look, there's 90 minutes, there's the receipts.
I'll do some shilling here as well. We did shill Panama hats, I'll show that at the end as well. But we have our speeches from the Nomos events over on our Substack. At some point over the next week or so, I'll have another very large piece out there. I know you're currently, I think, reading through that, Evelyn.
I was supposed to, but I'm glad you've reminded me because I haven't.
Oh, did you? It's fine. I've got a quite long one I've been writing for a good few months now that I couldn't quite get right until now, called The Holy Mountain. It should be a hopefully not schizo read, but it'll be a little bit different than some of the stuff I've written before. So, I know you've got a few things in the works, but we do have our No More Speech over there, and that's where our written stuff is. If you want to subscribe, there's a good backlog of stuff there to read as well. We'll be back with our regular Thursday stream, I think.
Possibly, if we can come up with something to speak about, and also for the OG channel followers, we'll be back on the one mic setup.
We will be back on the one mic setup, yes, finally. So that'll be something to look out for those who got wise during that period. That was kind of funny. I'll think of, there's so many other topics I want to cover that we haven't been able to cover, just evergreen stuff that we could just have a fun stream. We could finally do that Hyperborea stream we've been threatening to do.
See that one? I want to really knock it out of the park if we go.
I know
that far, so it's.
It wouldn't. We'd have to properly research those. Mm-hmm. In fact, we should probably start doing that. I'd like to get the proper like skit streams done. They're going to be good fun. As always, do interact with the video. Do leave a comment. Do like it. I know it's so cringe to say.
Please engage in
terrible,
your ritual interaction so that we
please
can
engage
summon
in
the algorithm
interaction,
gods.
Because that is the only way we can summon the algorithm gods. As you said there, Apple, and took the words right out of my mouth. I don't think we've missed anything. Let me double check the back end for any donations that I've missed. I don't think I've missed any. Nope. We're up to date with donations. Well, apart from that, I will just say thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for following along. We'll probably post some show notes as well. They won't be as in depth as some of the others because this is just the stories. But we'll try to. I'll try to get those in the pinned comment, and I'll put them out as a community post as well. Thank you guys again. Is there anything you have to shill at all? Apart from if you want to put, I don't have the link to hand. If you want to put the link to Panama Hat's video in the chat quickly,
I can. Yes, no. I as I've sort of been mentioning my. Ability to write and contribute stuff to the Substack at the moment is a bit stunted, but I don't know, I'm trying to manage my time a bit differently and hopefully produce something next year that is a standalone book and product of its own that will be a summation of a lot of stuff we've already said in places like democratization and some of the bits in these streams, plus a whole host of other stuff. And in a certain sense, the more I think about it, I'm like, well, I could just take it all and I could just write them up all as all articles and put it all on Substack. But like, I kind of want to properly challenge myself and put it all together in one thing that is a proper book. It feels like it's more important and more kind of official. Anyone can,
yeah.
Not anyone, because obviously anyone can't. There's all sorts of god-awful stuff in there that would dictate to you the fact that not anyone can just put a Substack article together that's readable. But
no.
I don't know. I think as well for the return sometimes that we get out of certain things. I did notice actually last week I got the first paid sort of supporter for the Substack came through, which if you're out there, I can't quite remember your name at the moment, but thank you very much for that because it is... It does remind me of the fact that there are people out there who are willing to support this stuff. And a certain extent, well, not to add loads and loads onto the stream here this evening, but whilst there's people still there listening, it's a two-way street. You know, we enjoy doing the streams and we will continue to do them in some way, shape or form. But when it comes to longer form content, like we did originally with democratization, with written content, which... You know, you'll know yourself, sometimes a good article that's a 15-minute read takes days, maybe even weeks, to really,
yeah.
You know, and that's before you even think about the reading done beforehand. And so, you know, for us to do that, you know, I at one point tried to think, oh, yeah, we know, I'll write something every 2 weeks or I'll try and write something once a month. That means that I'm then taking a week or 2 weeks that I could be using to, you know, come up with stuff like this. So we've got, because I think the streams as of late have actually been very interesting. A lot of people seem to enjoy them. So, you know, without some sort of way to show that people are either willing to support streams via super chats or writing on Substack via paid subscriptions over there, we can only continue to just kind of do what we think is worth our time at the moment. And that's why... You know, to come back round of it, I think focusing on a book is possibly the wisest thing I can do because it's a lot more marketable and is something that can really be seen as a sort of return on investment. And I also just enjoy the reading anyway. So
yes, but I agree. Very worth. It's there's only so much you can dedicate of your time. You only have so much time.
So
we have to use our finite time.
If there are people out there who do actually read and want us to be more current on the Substack, I can take time away from that, but I need that, you know, I need the signalling to get it kicked off anyway. See, we've now got the bloody porn bots in the chat, so that's enough from us this evening.
Yes.
that's YouTube letting us know we're babbling and talking shite.
We've been targeted by the Le Porn bots. So we will say goodnight. The crook is coming in. We're being pulled off stage. have a good evening, folks. We're off.